Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital, the organisation that helps other charities be more digital. Today, we have a special podcast for you. In March, we had over 400 charity professionals join us at Olympia London for a day of learning, knowledge sharing and connecting. We managed to record all of the 22 sessions from the day, and we'll be releasing them as bonus podcasts throughout the series to help share some of the amazing conversations we were having on the day. If you want to keep up to date with all our upcoming podcasts and events, like and subscribe the podcast through your usual podcast provider and sign up for Charity Digital updates at charitydigital.org.uk. Enjoy the pod.
Delighted to have you back here in room five and back to hosting duties in our first session to, you know, kick off the afternoon. And it's not an all the graveyard slot after lunch. It's got nothing to do with that. It's actually one of the most important ones, and I'm now serious. A lot of people in all the sessions I've been to since this morning have mentioned how hard it can be to bring people along with you when you're on the path to digital transformation, be it your staff, be it your trustees, be it your funders, be it your customers or beneficiaries. And lovely guys from Trillium, Alan and Gavin, are going to start talking about how you do stakeholder management through your digital transformation, so which really means how to convince people that what you're doing is right and take them along without them standing on the sidelines and commenting you and criticizing. So it's a really important session. I'm really, really delighted that the Trillium guys are here to talk to us about it. We're going to run for about half an hour as a presentation, and then we will take questions as per the normal new normal convention. We have a mic, people line up Tesco style and ask their questions, and I think that sort of worked quite well last time, so we'll try that again. But handing over to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So good afternoon, everybody. I'm Alan Perestrello.
I'm Gavin Pollock.
So thank you for taking the graveyard shift. It's a bit daunting after lunch. I know all the carbs need to settle. So we are looking for as much audience participation as possible. So if we say stuff and you disagree. Tell us you've got a better idea.
I do kind of feel like we're mic'd up ready to an exercise class, though. So yeah. If we want to make this into the power half hour, we can carry on.
Yeah. Also, what I think could be quite funny, and I'm hoping will happen, is that the amazing person who's doing the text conversion probably will struggle with my drawl, my South African drawl. So if they get it wrong, you can laugh. It's okay. So what we really wanted to do is to talk about how we see kind of stakeholder engagement from our perspective and what we've learned over the years and what we've done working with, you know, 35, 40 organizations and the lessons learned. My head of marketing, who's at the back, would criticize me endlessly if I didn't say our hashtag is experience matters. So a lot of this is built from our experience in terms of delivering those projects for a lot of clients. So I'm going to come back to this particular analogy with the video in terms of feet sinking in the sand. So just remember that, but it comes back again. So I really wanted to talk about how we can support you in creating a digital culture, and really that starts with getting the stakeholder buy-in, because the projects and the change programs you want to kick off are not going to happen if you don't have that buy-in. So really what we wanted to do is just kind of share our perspective, you know, generate some debate. So please, we do want to talk it through. We want to learn from you as much as, you know, we want to kind of share our thoughts and things. And ultimately, we kind of want to drive change. So one of the things that we've heard today, and we hear a lot at events like this, is just how difficult some of these things can be. So whilst we might be a technology provider or a solutions provider or a systems integrator, we get lots of labels, actually what we want to do is drive change in your organization, right? And we might be doing that through technology, and that's relevant because technology influences your business in so many ways. So just a little bit of background. Gavin and I founded Trillium in 2010. We've worked together for probably about 19 years, so does come across as a bit of a Laurel and Hardy, sometimes husband and wife act, so apologies for that. So we're based in London Bridge. We've got a small office in Portugal, the north of Portugal, where we do a kind of support, but we're fundamentally about supporting UK charities and membership organizations achieve more with what they've got. And the common theme that we see in the sector we focus on, which is the NFP sector, is that it's hard because you don't have enough funds or resources at your disposal about how you're going to make these changes. So hopefully we can help you with that, because you've got a lot of experience with it. We work with best of breed platforms, which we'll show you. But fundamentally, we're about trying to work very closely with our clients, and we really like to be seen as a partner to a client rather than a supplier. So if you really want to hurt us, call us a supplier. And I can see a client in the room, so there you know how to hit home, hit a nerve, call us a supplier. And we like to be seen as a critical friend, you know, so that true partnership is that we can say, yes, your bum does look big in that. So if we think that your strategy isn't right or we think that you're making a wrong decision, we'll say it because we're interested in the long-term relationship that we can hopefully have with our clients. So just a very quick background on what we do is we're fairly unique in the space in the sense that what we're doing is we're uniting kind of three things that shouldn't exist in one organization. So one, we're probably well known for the CRM piece, which is about data and systems and processes and workflows and automation. And we're very good at that. What we're also very good at is the digital piece. So we build the websites, we build the customer experiences or the donor experiences that people use. So that's why we're so interested in experience and user experience of people. But what we sometimes find, and probably today is about the strategy piece. It's about how can we help you figure out how you're going to take this journey. Because those other two things, they're just technologies. Without a strategy, they won't succeed. So hopefully we can kind of illustrate that today. So who do we work with? A number of organizations. This is just a selection I thought was probably relevant to today. And hopefully that illustrates a broad range. So probably 85% of our business is based on NFP clients who all share common issues and challenges that you do as well. And there's probably about another two slides of kind of client logos that we work with. So what do we do? We've spoken about the business systems and the strategies. We use some of these technologies. So Dynamics is a very popular topic at the moment. It's been something Gavin and I have worked on for probably 14 or 15 years. We've got about 160, 170 years worth of experience on Dynamics in our business, so there's quite a lot. We do a lot around SharePoint and Braco. We use .digital, we use Click Dimensions. We're specialist in Azure. These are all the tools that we use to help solve your problem. So whilst they're sometimes interesting, I'd really like to kind of forget about them for this session because I think that they're kind of distractionary. So we've got a guide, and we'll share this with you, but if you wanted, there's a QR code to see if that will actually work. So we've got a guide in terms of how, you know, creating a digital culture, and some of the stuff that we'll talk about is in that guide. The guide goes into a bit more detail, and I'm going to be honest, put this deck together a week ago, and probably some of it's changed already, so I might go slightly off-piste. What we really wanted to kind of stress is that fundamentally, what we're hearing a lot is the kind of digital transformation, and a lot of conversations that were happening with people is kind of, I think we're all starting to get tired of the digital transformation or the fact that you need a digital strategy, and I think that's actually a good thing. That's a sign that we're kind of making progress. And actually, a lot of what we're hearing now is that you've got to be kind of more of a digital-centric business rather than an organization that has a digital strategy. So as a charity, it's really important that we can embed digital into your organization so it isn't something that's on the side.
We had a really interesting conversation this morning in our breakfast briefing where some of the questions came up were, you know, why is it so hard to kind of put a digital strategy in front of a board of trustees or whatever? Because they don't understand digital. Actually, someone else in the room responded and said, it's not just about digital strategy. Your business cases and your justifications and means are exactly the same for a digital strategy as they would be for any other strategy that your business or organization should be supporting. And that's what's so true. I think when you're talking about digital transformation, everyone does focus on the digital part of it, but actually we need to back down from that a bit more and just think about its transformation.
And people drive that transformation. So this is maybe more a little bit of fun. So kind of, does anyone recognize that? Life of Pi, so you know the story, you kind of know the background and kind of guy, you know, he's in charge, you've got a tiger on the boat with him and great. And maybe that's what your objective is. But does anyone feel like that's actually what you're doing? It's kind of a bit more pretending, you know, you've seen the movie and you get the idea. And I think that's relevant to what we see happening is, and I think sometimes, and I don't want Jonathan or any of the charity digital people to hear me say this, but I think sometimes these events can be a little bit downheartening because you might hear about amazing things that another organization's doing and then everyone's going, oh, but we're not getting anywhere near that. Trust me, they started on the right-hand side somewhere too, right? Everybody's been there. So what we wanted to do is say, well, how do you get from, you know, get to that amazing objective? It fundamentally starts at the start of the journey is about getting the stakeholder buy-in. So that's kind of what we wanted to see if we can share. So a little bit of background, what we're seeing in the kind of NFP landscape at the moment, and I won't go into too much detail on all of these, but there's a lot of pressure on you guys. You know, you're expected to be everywhere, you're expected to be perfect, you're not allowed to make any mistakes, there's a lot of scrutiny, there's a lot around governance.
You're judged against Amazon and Netflix.
Yeah, but you don't have their budgets, and you don't have their governance structures, and they certainly don't have to go to trustees every time they need to spend £5. So there's a lot of pressure on you guys. We're starting to see that kind of the aging platforms are starting to really hold you back a bit. So we're seeing people kind of saying, well, I've got all these ambitions and I know what to do, but I'm struggling because I can't do it. I haven't got the tech. Some of you haven't got the strategies yet, but there's a lot of pressure. And fundamentally, all of this is driving change in your organizations. Change is hard and it's difficult, but it's also essential. So one of the things we keep telling customers, it's gonna be hard. If someone's told you that this change is gonna be easy and that it's gonna be smiles and everyone's gonna be laughing all the time, they're lying, right? The truth is, it's hard, it's painful. Human beings resist change, especially if they resist change they're not part of. So number one is you've got to get people to be part of that change and they won't resist it.
As much, yeah.
But there's a huge opportunity, and I think that's why you're all here. As you can see that in certain spaces, if you get this mix right, where you can get your internal stakeholders to buy in and you can get things moving and you can make these changes, you can better engage and interact with these new donors, new volunteers, people who've got a different way of seeing your organization. If you can get that mix right, you're going to be talking about your successes, right? So that's kind of the opportunity. This slide comes up a lot, and I had to kind of take it out, repeating it, because that's what I wanted to do in this session, but it's all about communication. So you've just got to remember that to get the stakeholder buy-in piece, which is where the journey starts, it's about communication and how you can communicate, and keep communicating, and recognize that the lack of communication will be the single biggest thing that will stop you from making progress. So that's the first and foremost thing that we wanted to kind of get across. And I won't go into all those kind of points on the right. You know, some of them we've already talked about. Something one of our clients said, which I think is really interesting, is kind of change is continual, so therefore the communication needs to be continual. And sometimes what happens is maybe, you know, he was referring to them as an organization, but I think it happens at a board level or a trustee level where people are trying to make those changes, is you get bored of saying the same thing. And you think, oh, this is so boring. I'd be bored if I had to hear this message. But think about the broader audience. If they don't know the pain and the effort and the energy that's going into this change, they've probably got other things to worry about, so they're gonna forget. So if you just keep reminding people of what's the goal, where are we going, it's gonna be challenging, but we have a plan, we're gonna adapt, we're gonna survive, we're gonna get there. That amount of communication cannot be underestimated.
For me, one of the most important ones is also the managing expectations part. I get involved a lot more in the kind of implementation and delivery. So it's one thing, you know, starting off on a very positive note and telling everyone we're going to be doing something new and it's going to be amazing. And then down the line, that whole change is hard starts coming in and people start going, oof, actually, this is a lot of work. And you've kind of got to make sure that they understand that it's going to be hard first and then the benefits will come. I think most people get that nowadays, but it's pointless just being entirely positive and cheerleading the entire way. You've got to manage expectations as well.
Yeah. And I think being iterative in that communication is really important. So iterative these days gets used a lot in a kind of agile sense, which is methodology, and there's a lot that's great about that. But if you think about the word iterative, it's, for me at least, it implies that you do something in small chunks, but you test, you iterate. You iterate and you learn. So you've got to be able to kind of recognize that sometimes the message not might be getting through. So you might need to change the message. And I think it's about being able to say, get the right message to the right person at the right time. Yeah, because stakeholders are not one individual group of people. We think there are four groups. But within those groups, they're going to have individual motivations. Some of them are going to be aligned with your organization. Some of them are going to be aligned with themselves. So you've got to find the right message for the right person at the right time. So to try and sort of get that kind of message going further forward is kind of, first question if you're talking to kind of This is not that clear. So the stuff in green at the top there says your board of trustees. For me, the question they'll always ask you is, you want to spend how much? All right. So they're immediately kind of, you know, kind of questioning, well, you know, where's this going to go? What's the benefit going to be? And they're already starting from a negative perspective because you're asking them for money. So if you're asking them for money, I think you've just got to go back to the strategy. What is your charity strategy? What are its goals and missions? What are its objectives? And benchmark how you're going to do a better job at delivering on those objectives if you get this change program and this transformation program underway. So I'd kind of keep trying to stress that you've just got to keep linking it back to the strategy. Create some sort of ROI. If you could create like a return on investment, I think that's easier to do in a negative sense. So I'd say think about what does it cost to not do something? And I think anyone who's currently sitting on those really old legacy products or projects where they haven't been upgraded in 10 years and you can't do anything and you're watching all the opportunities slip away, that's the cost of not doing something. So in our business, in our own business, but also when we're talking with clients, we talk about trying not to build technical debt, right? And I think if you can have a conversation with the finance director or the trustee that's in charge of the purse strings and get them to say, can we quantify technical debt? I think that's actually quite a scary thing for people to take on board. So for those of you who probably manage IT budgets, you'll know what I'm talking about. That phrase is really powerful because it helps illustrate the fact that every day you're not changing, you're actually building debt. Stuff that doesn't do anything for you. And finance directors really get nervous when you say that stuff is somewhere on our balance sheet, you just can't see it. So I'd start there by trying to get them to figure out. There is a way of drawing a correlation between savings you can make by freeing people up. I was just having a conversation now with a lady who runs a really small but very effective charity. And she was describing what the user group do every day. A hell of a lot of manual labor. And she can't afford to hire twice the number of people, but she needs to double the size of service users she interacts with. That's her mission. It's to double the number of service users they impact. So being able to do that with the same number of people, the only way you're going to do that is by improving processes and to automate the painful bits. And that's where, you know, transformation is going to come in. When you're trying to build that business case, ask others what they spent. You're in a collaborative community that is very different to a commercial world. So if we don't work with big firms and law firms and insurance companies and banks and stuff, but the analogy I always use is if we were trying to sell something to Shell and we'd done a good job with BP, we probably wouldn't get BP to talk to Shell and say, hey, these are the lessons we learned, because they're competitors and they don't get on. Generally speaking, in the NFP sector, you're not competing, right? Not directly. So there's a lot of knowledge here, a lot of lessons can be learned. The more you attend these events, ask, share, there's a lot of information there and probably best lessons in terms of how to get good trustee sort of buy-in, you can get it over there. So, I mean, these are questions that we kind of dig into a little bit more in the guide, so I kind of, time-wise, I don't really want to go into them too much, but I think they're just questions that we're trying to get you to kind of ask, and we don't know the answers for your organization. Every single organization is different. But if you can ask those questions of yourselves, the answers will help you start figuring out what's the right message for the right people at the right time. And specifically, it's probably generated towards the you want to spend how much. So just quick show of hands, who recognizes when you're talking to kind of board of trustees, you want to spend how much? How often does that come up as a kind of big blocker for you guys in terms of money can't move things forward? A couple of hands over there. All right, so quite common. Hopefully this can help. And, you know, we've got, you know, clients who've made these changes and they can talk honestly about what it's taken to get there. Mm. And I'd ask them to share that at a trustee level. So this was quite interesting. So we're now talking kind of about the next level. 1 in 5 execs, and this is outside of the charity sector. This is in the sort of corporate sector where they've got plans and money and strategy and people to do all the stuff that you guys struggle with. 1 in 5 think it's a waste of time. Right, think that it isn't going to impact them personally. I look at it in an optimistic sense and say, well, actually, 4 out of 5 is actually thinking that this is good. So there is a lot of value to be had there. So for this group of people, I think the question shifts. So if you're talking to your peers, your executive team, you know, if you're trying to get the CEO to come on board and he's got lots of other problems and challenges, you want how much of my time? Or you're going to have to ask other people to say, guys, this isn't something that IT does. We as a group, a team of people, are going to have to deliver this transformation. It's going to take time from people. And I think that's probably the one area of projects that get confused or lost, is how much time these things are going to take. So we sometimes see, you know, tenders that will say, we want to make this change in 4 months. We get nervous because we know we can probably do that in 4 months. But how are we going to change your organization? How are you going to transform in 4 months if you don't do it all the time? I'll tell you who transforms really quickly in 4 months. People who go into administration, right? So big, compelling event, that drives that kind of change. You don't need to rush the change if you don't have those massive, compelling events. So I think take the amount of time and be appreciative of the fact that your colleagues are going to have to spend a lot of time, and recognize that this probably isn't on their radar, and they've got their own ambitions and their own projects and programs they want to move forward that are also competing for time.
We see a lot, we have a conversation near the end of implementation, and it's quite easy for us to forget as well when the process actually started at the client side themselves. You know, we get to the end and they're like, oh, it's taken 4 years to get here. Like, whoa, hold on, we've only been working with you for like 18 months. How's that possible? We're like, well, no, that's when the conversation started, you know, way back then, and those original things. And breaking it into smaller chunks over that four-year program is really important. And to demonstrate what the kind of deliverable goals are, not just, oh, we're still figuring out what we're going to do. You know, you can iterate. And the engender an agile mindset does not mean go only do agile projects, by the way. We don't do much in that kind of sense. But there is definitely something about having an agile mindset to think how you can be creative and deliver small things quickly that is really relevant.
So just an example of that kind of agile mindset. Who likes Lego? I like Lego. I'm a Lego fan. So, AFOLs. Yep, love you guys. So one of the things that's interesting about Lego is Lego's a business that's had to change a lot, right? They sell products that are based out of plastic, but they've had to change and adapt and be quite agile over the years. They're into movies, they're into content, they're into lots of things. So that kind of change, that requires an entire culture of change within their organization. So one of the things I find fascinating is that Lego actually budget in six-week sprints. So think about that. Could you have a conversation with your finance team that says, could I have budgets that are flexible and we can iterate in 6 weeks or 3 weeks or 6 months, right? But that concept of breaking things down into smaller chunks means that you can achieve more if you break things into smaller chunks. And the analogy there is always, how do you eat an elephant? Right? One bite at a time. Okay? It's a true, it's an old, it's hackneyed phrase, but it does work. And I think it gets lost sometimes when you're talking to your peers about how you're going to tackle this big change and everyone's talking about problems and all the things we can't do. Break it down into smaller chunks and just get some successes along the way. And don't forget that everyone you're dealing with in your kind of peer group at an exec level, if you're trying to get other people to buy in, they've got people that work underneath them. So if you can't get them to spread this positive message about the good that's going to come and manage expectations on your behalf, you're just going to end up with a lot of people who don't buy into your program. So you just got to see the fact that you've got to get some cheerleaders and try and get the most successful ones to be the best cheerleaders. So if you break it down into iterative chunks and you can do something with one team and demonstrate some great stuff and you can keep communicating and shouting about it and you've not forgotten to be a cheerleader, other people will go, oh, okay, well, they were similar to us. They were behind, but now we're making progress. We can make progress too. So I think there's something there about being able to communicate often and remember to support people and their teams. So I think, you know, questions you can ask yourself is, can you take an agile approach? And I don't mean an agile methodology, but can you just be a bit more iterative? Can you think a bit more flexibly and try and take a three-year program of work and break it down into lots of six-month chunks of work? And then, you know, figure out what are people's biggest concerns so that you can start addressing them. You know, write them down and say, how do I tackle that? And I don't mean just communicate around it. I mean actually tackle it. So if people are worried about the amount of time they're going to spend, go back to the CEO and say, we need people to have more flexible time. We've had to do it in our own business and realize we can't just make change after hours or over lunchtime. People have got to have time in their diaries to change. So now if we're talking about people, I think this is kind of a really key thing. If you're now talking about the people who are going to be the doers, the guys who are all using the systems, the volunteers, the donors, don't replace legacy systems, right, and keep the old processes in place. So many times when we're doing a discovery process or someone's given us a tender with 600 lines of requirements on it, we'll see stuff that we go, wow, that's complicated. Then you dig in, you go, well, why do you do it that way? Oh, we've always done that way. Actually, when we look into it, a lot of people's processes, the things they spend their entire day doing at work, is based on an old piece of software, right? A piece of software that was maybe developed at a time, hell, some of them were developed before email was a thing. Now we're talking about social engagement. Now we're talking about being able to manage lots of disparate volunteers, being able to track data, be able to use data. So if you're going to replace the systems, you've got to think about changing the processes and trying to align them and trying to get some best practice to underpin them. So there, I think the question you've got to think about is, what's in it for me? Right? Because if you're at the top of the kind of organizational pyramid and you've got lots of people, you know, at the bottom of the ground who are going to have to go through these projects, they're the ones who are going to have to go through testing, they're the ones who are going to have to learn, and they're going to have to training, and they're going to have to sit in workshops. And some of that's quite frustrating, and they're going to have to go through things where it isn't going to work, and they're going to have to pick themselves up and go through it. So you are going to have to figure out how to personally motivate people. And sometimes, like Gavin was saying, is, you know, sometimes people are worried about their own kind of issues and things, and a big system replacement can sometimes be daunting to people who've been in the organization for a very long time. And those, in our experience, are the ones who are going to generate the most resistance from day one. So you've got to try and illustrate to them how it's going to be better for them, how it's going to improve their ability to do their jobs. And people ultimately are going to want to do their jobs better. So if you can just focus on that and how you're going to enable them and grow them as people, that's a big motivator for people. So you do need to be, you know, providing upskilling and training. And there are some great people that we meet often who do come in and do digital skills assessments and will tell you, right, you know, you've got to do this before you can do that. We actually had to learn that on a project recently. We underestimated the level of technical capability in an organization. Everything was tested, it was working just fine. But actually rolling it out and people saying, all right, I'm now going to take this on board, it took a little bit longer. So we paused the project and we waited and we spent more time and we just kept going back over the stories and kept going back over the training and a bit more testing. And eventually they went live when they were ready to go live. And the net result is it's been a way easier onboarding session. They've come off that post-go-live curve without having that kind of project fatigue because they had time to just get used to it. And again, it goes back to rushing things. So this is about people. So thinking about what channels do people consume. You know, if you're going to try and make this communication personal and about a person and try and get them on board, you're going to have to try and think about the method you use for trying to talk to them through it. And ask them, why should they have confidence in it? You know, so that's a question they're going to ask you. You know, we've seen projects have failed before. What's going to be different about this one? I think be realistic. You know, it's going to be hard. But we're going to use tools and we're going to ask people for advice and guidance and we're going to iterate and we're going to talk more. And that's what's going to make it more of a success. I think sometimes we see business cases, we were talking about this earlier this morning, get blown out of proportion and made into way bigger things. Try and resist that. Yeah, because it just starts creating a lot of big expectations that then put lots of pressure on people. So I was going to come back to this and kind of talk about what it is. So has anyone ever had this feeling when you're on the beach and there's like a strong current going back out and you're just standing still and you look down and you realize, actually, I can't move my feet as easily as I did because they're sunk under the sand. So the analogy here is that those waves are time, you know, and they're going to keep kind of just wearing down and dragging you down into things unless you move, right? They avoid that situation by moving and doing something. So I think that's kind of my takeaway with this is don't fall into that trap. You can move on and you can kind of keep things moving if you don't just stand still. So take action. Don't rush it, but take action. And the one thing I was going to leave before we get into sort of the discussion part of things, and we can share it as a couple of case studies if we have time, but fundamentally, the one thing I wanted to share with you guys is please, please, please do not buy technology to solve a transformation challenge, okay? I've had some scary conversations with clients. Say, if I just get a new CRM, it's going to change everything. I'm going to double my number of donors. It isn't going to happen, guys. It's an important part of the journey. It's essential you get the right technology to support you. But technology is not going to solve a people problem. And this transformation thing is about people, and people are part of that thing. You're going to have to work with people to get it through. So there's some case studies we can share if there's some time. Okay.
We're going to take some questions. This was brilliant. Thank you very much. Lots of super, super good advice. And I think not downhearted and difficult, but really full of hope and passion. So anybody wants to start with the questions? Do you want to? Any first taker? Is it that post-lunch slot? Anybody want to share an example of having a difficult time with some of their stakeholders, maybe around digital transformation?
How are we doing questions? Are we coming up to the microphone?
Yes, we're going to the microphone. We're going to the microphone. This is a Mohammed in the mountain kind of situation.
Would you like to come up and ask your question? Oh, that's a bit too much.
I don't want to come up.
Yeah. Go, we can hear you.
Yep.
No, well, yes, I will repeat it.
We'll translate.
We'll translate, yes, sorry. Yeah. So the question is, your stakeholders have bought into the buying new systems. They just don't, they're not ready for a full business transformation. Is that fair?
Yeah. So in order to, I guess, iterate towards that, thinking about keeping their old processes with the new technology and then going towards, is that a viable?
Yeah, no, I think, my kind of take on that is, I think some processes will have to change inevitably because the new tech is going to force some kind of process change in good ways, right? So the user's no longer going to have to export the Excel file and then save it to their local desktop and then use their back software and then upload it, and because it's just going to go through. So some of that process change will kind of happen anyway, but really those are normally about efficiencies, and that can be dealt with training. And those are the processes that definitely you do want to come in with the new tech and everything, but you don't have to fundamentally shift the business. There is definitely a danger of trying to go too far, in that first step. We often say is, just get that core foundation in, get the new tech, the new platform in, change the processes that kind of come along with that package, and a few more, as much as you think the organization can handle, and then iterate. Use that as the basis. I think we all know this statement now, where the project doesn't stop at go live. That's the start of the project for most of the people that are going to be involved in it.
So how far ahead do you plan? 6 months, 12 months, 18 months? I mean, what's the sort of runway that you should be thinking of in terms of timeline?
Well, I think every organization is different. So it comes back down to your culture. So if you've got a culture that doesn't do change, you might need more time. If you've got a culture that does change, or you're smaller and you're more naturally more agile and adaptable, then you can do that. I think trying to time box it, though, is quite important. So one of the things that we'll sometimes see with big programs of work is that people will spend an inordinate amount of time writing down requirements, sometimes 6 months writing down requirements, but not more than 6 days thinking about how the people are going to change and the processes and that sort of stuff. So try and time box things. Mainly because the longer this thing takes, external change will continue to drive and adapt your business or your organization without you. And the longer you leave it, your plans are just going to naturally drift out. So sometimes we see people spend 3 years trying to implement something that was logical 3 years ago, but things have changed. And then it gets evaluated by today's standards.
I think if you don't, at a very simple level, if you don't kind of have a roadmap of at least the next 2 years, then you definitely need to think about that. Ideally, you really want to have 4 or 5. That could be a really loose roadmap, but the key is also maybe to replan every year, and involve the stakeholders and involve the people and kind of go through that process together. because priorities will change.
Mm. There was another question, someone raised a hand at the back.
Just to share an example, I suppose. I work for a charity, it's an interpreting service, and we work across 50 languages, so there are lots of challenges. But the biggest challenge is not our service users as such, it's the kind of mindset in the organisation, even though we're a communication agency, essentially. But the one area that I think really everybody kind of got is we started using quick response codes with service users. Because people often think, oh, there's a digital divide, but sometimes there isn't a digital divide. People have got phones, they can scan, and we use these codes to take people directly to translated materials on our website. And that example, where we use, where people in the organisation could see service users doing that, really helped people understand that digital is about us supporting our service users. And just on the back of that, recently, just a few weeks ago, some Chinese service users said to us, we can't use, we don't really use the internet in the way you would like us to use the internet. We can't attach our health appointment letters and send it to you in the way you want us to. Can you set us up a WhatsApp group? And it's like, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. We're seeing more and more just on a really basic level now of kind of WhatsApp integration becoming a thing. Yeah, everyone's just thought about WhatsApp as a, what we all use. But now we can, with the new kind of Dynamics 365 flow and Power Automate, we can connect up a WhatsApp service and just start sending, that sounds a bit cavalier, but, start sending out these communications to the individuals you work with.
But as an example, have you been able to use that as an example of good things and communicate it and kind of what I call, you need to be a cheerleader. So people can kind of go, we can do this, and they can buy into it, and they can see that it's possible.
Yeah, it was used as an example that everybody can understand, so it just demystifies digital. It's like, it's a really simple thing, like it used to be, it's very direct.
Thank you.
It helps people.
Yeah,
so it was a, yep.
Thanks for an engaging presentation. My question is, how do you do digital transformation when you're managing people remotely?
Well, I think we're going to find out in about 6 weeks' time, because we're going to probably all be doing projects. We're going to be doing a lot of projects remotely, apparently. I think it comes back to that. It's a cultural thing, and the project needs to take that into account. So if the project's going to come with like a playbook that says we do this normally and doesn't take that into account, then I think you've got to have a plan that will engage people remotely. So I think that will probably take more time. I think that workshops will probably be a bit more challenging, and I think there's a risk there that people don't, when people are in conference calls or on the other end of a kind of video feed, they're not as engaged. There's a tendency for people to look at their phones or drift off and stuff. So I think that you'd need to find some mechanisms for making sure that people stay engaged with those processes. The technical part can be done, but I think it's probably some strategies that you could use around just keep revisiting with people and going, how did you find that session? Are you sure? And make sure that they kind of see it as they've got to check in, they've got to provide feedback, and it becomes a bit like we're checking your homework, is one thing that springs to mind.
The workshops are great, the communicators are great, and then as soon as you walk away and leave it, I work for an international development organization, so I'm talking from here to West Africa.
Mm.
So I go and visit, and when I come back, it's kind of business as normal.
Yeah.
So how do you break that cycle?
I think it goes down to that, you've got to spend more time iterating, going back to them. One of the things that we've used may not be entirely relevant, but one of the things that we've used in a few projects now, where there's a disparate group of external stakeholders, is to produce a very basic website that just talks about what the project is, what's happening with the project. So sharing project updates, etc. And this might sound a little kind of Machiavellian, but what I might do in that situation is, on the plane or on the way back, is post something back to the website. Just come back from, the guys in, Uganda, we had some amazing sessions, everybody agreed they're going to do this, so we're going to see some stuff. Post it on the website. Because then it's pretty hard for someone to go, oh damn, I'm not going to have to meet that commitment, right? So you can do that under the guise of transparency. right? So I think somewhere on one of those slides was transparency. You can use that transparency to kind of drag people along. And then don't forget, there's got to be some accountability and check-ins. But again, if you make it iterative, you know, so if their ability to do something is seven-month programs or what, you're going to lose them. So if you make it smaller, so off the top of my head, I haven't really thought about that, but I'd go back now and I'd say, if you've got those remote ones, you're probably going to have to iterate more in smaller cycles more often.
I mean, I dare say there's probably some other people in the room that have dealt with similar challenges.
So we're going to have to close just as it's all going to get really exciting. But the good news is those guys are around, right? And
yep.
There's a big
yep.
Trillium stand right in the middle. Can't miss it. And I think the best thing would be just to go there and continue the conversation, because there's so much more that could be said and obviously so many more questions in the room. Can we give these really brilliant speakers a round of applause, please?
Thanks, Thank you. Thanks to you guys.